Hello and welcome to the show brought to you by the YAFC, or the Youth Advocates for Change. And the YAFC is a project sponsored by the RAISE Center, which is a center devoted to supporting parent centers that support people with disabilities in making the transition from school to adult life, whether that be on the job, going to college or post-secondary options, or just trying to find their best independent life as independence mean and what independence means to them. And my name is Everett Deibler. And with me today, we have two members of the YAFC, and I'm going to have one of them go first. So Aaron, do you want to introduce yourself and talk about where you're from?
Sure. So I'm Aaron. My pronouns are she, her, hers, and I'm from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And with Aaron, we have...
I am Jennifer. My pronouns are also she, her, hers. And I am currently in the Bay Area, California.
And thank you both for being here. And one of the cool things about this podcast is that it is really trying to bring the youth voice to topics that matter within the idea of making the transition from school to adult life. So we don't really have a script. We don't really rehearse these things. This is just honest and frank conversation about experiences and perspectives. And we hope as if you are a parent, if you are a young adult, if you are a parent center staff, we hope that you benefit from the conversations that we have on these episodes. And this episode today it's going to sound a little negative, I guess, in a way of like the impact of not having accommodations in place. But hopefully we can have a conversation that expresses or showcases the power of having accommodations. But for some people, that term accommodations might be new. So Aaron, could you, take a few minutes and take a stab at maybe defining what they are? And like their possible importance to people with disabilities.
Yeah, so I think we can start by just doing some examples because I think that can be a good way to understand the concept. So for example, like accommodations can be anything from, you know, some of the things that I've experienced. So like when I was in high school, I actually used my iPhone to type notes. And so that was considered an accommodation. When I was in college, you know, there was extended time to take a test. And so accommodations basically are something to assist someone to make it more an equitable experience. And it always has to be something that is a reasonable accommodation, because if you're, you know, throwing something out there like, yeah, I need a Diet Coke every hour at my job, that's not reasonable. It's something you like, you know? So it has to be something that is a reasonable accommodation, such as one of the other things I needed was a door that I could open to get into the bathroom. So that's pretty reasonable, because when you're at work, you probably need to go to the bathroom at some point. So that was pretty reasonable as far as the access I needed. So yeah, that's kind of a good way to describe it.
And the accommodations that can be provided can be simple things like an elevated desk or extra time, like you said, extra time on a test or testing in a quiet space when you're in school or like when you're on the job. Maybe it's that you get to take, you know, you work the same amount of hours, but you get to take more frequent breaks, or you have things like a standing desk. It can be that you're allowed to, or that you're permitted to attend, you know, sessions with a therapist. That's, you know, not at work necessarily, but that you're supposed to be given time to attend those meetings when needed, and all those kind of things. Those are reasonable accommodations. And so when we're talking about those accommodations, those, Aaron, you did a great job, but I see it as they level the playing field, right? They make it possible for someone with a disability, or they make it, I guess it takes away barriers that could have existed and makes it possible for someone to thrive or have an equal opportunity in the academic environment or on the job. That's how, or go to the bathroom, like Aaron said. Right? that's definitely a need. Okay. So it can be simple things, it can be software. And I bet many of you listening to this would have experienced or have worked with people receiving some kind of accommodation in spaces. And so we wanted to talk a little bit about, though, what it's like to not have those things in place and how that might inform people, professionals working with people with disabilities. Like, those conversations can be a challenge, asking for accommodations, not getting them, and then kind of dealing with those consequences. So, Jennifer, I'm going to go to you first and say, what was it like for you? And Erin kind of already mentioned some of the things that she used in high school, but what was it like not having accommodations while you were in high school or in your school experience?
It was very difficult. And I think what ended up happening is, so I went to school on the East Coast, but this is not a story that is East Coast specific. Once I got to high school, my high school was just fully unwilling to provide any accommodations. And they spent, we're talking about reasonable accommodations, they spent more effort fighting to not give us, to not give me accommodations than they ever did to do anything to help. And there were a whole bunch of legal challenges. And at the end of the day, none of it really helped me at all. In fact, very much hindered me. But the specific story that I like to tell is one of the things that we asked for was, I really struggled to take notes in class. And I knew that, and I didn't, but I never really understood how bad it was. And they fought us every inch of the way. They said, we can't give you notes because these teachers don't. They don't even have notes for class, so that they don't have notes to give you. And I just, and at the time, I kind of just, I myself kind of just accepted that. I was like, look, I had already internalized that I was not good at this enough. And I kind of gave up fighting at some point, even if some people around me were. So I never really understood how badly my schoolwork was affected by the fact that I was so focused on taking notes, I wasn't learning anything. Flash forward to a couple years ago, I am on the phone, on a phone menu, trying to get connected with a primary care provider. I eventually did get connected, but I had spent a couple of weeks trying to like listen to the phone menu, and I could not do this work of both processing the words and writing down which options I needed to write. And eventually in frustration, I reached out to someone and I was like, can you just write down what I need to do in this phone menu? Then I can go through it, press the buttons, and talk to an actual person. And once they did that, once I had notes in front of me and I didn't have to focus on processing and writing at the same time,
yes.
I had scheduled an appointment the next week. The next day, actually. It took me one day once I had those notes. But the next week I was in talking to a doctor.
So was that like an epiphany for you? Like,
it was an epiphany for me. It's like realizing that like how much of that would have helped if I could have just focused on class instead of trying to learn this skill that I was never going to be able to learn because of auditory processing stuff.
One, helping you to focus on your strengths.
Exactly.
Right. And do and find ways to make it work for you. Right.
The sort of thing that I always say, and this is not is people, a lot of people say that if you give a man a fish, they eat for a day, you teach a man to fish, they eat for their life. And the response that I always give is that you cannot learn to fish if you are starving, because you need patience. And you can't learn to fish on an empty stomach. And in my mind, that's the thing that accommodations do, is they fill up our stomach so we can go fishing.
Wow, that should be like a t-shirt or something. We need to make like a bumper sticker or like a meme or whatever. I almost said that's a great story, but I'll put it, it is a powerful story, and I think a great message. And I think that if you're listening to this and you know that you're working with a young adult who may be resistant to kind of talking about their disability and what accommodations might support them, or understanding them, I think that an episode like this can be really powerful, and stories like that from a young person talking about that power and I guess, or the power of accommodations. And the one other thing I want to maybe have Aaron touch on is maybe experiencing this kind of thing at work. And maybe you have your accommodations in place now, and maybe you always have, but can you talk about some of the dialogue or maybe some of the things that you may have faced kind of seeking your first professional job, kind of what the realities are? Because Jennifer touched on this in a school sense where, you know, the school is like, no. And it's like, and everybody's probably like, wait a minute, there's laws that say you must do this, mm-hmm. right? But some people, they just resist. And so do you have any experiences around employment and that kind of experience, or just having barriers, places you don't need them?
Yeah, I think, you know, I never want to say that, you know, this world is thankful for COVID. I don't think anyone would say that necessarily. But I think what it has taught us is the flexibility in working from home for certain jobs. And I think that's what really opened up my world as far as a job search, because in Minnesota, there's days that are definitely weather preventative to getting to work, even though my work is very close to me. So that definitely opened it up for me. And there's some days where I do have really high paying days, and staying at home gives me the accessibility to do what I need to tolerate that. And being in an office, you can't necessarily just be in pain and deal with people necessarily. So in that sense, that I can do my work the way that I need to and get over some of those days that might not be the best. So when it comes to accommodations with my job, it actually was like, I think within the first couple of days that we had to fill out a form that said, do you need any accommodations? And ironically, the form, I think, only had like 300 characters. So it gave you a very short little thing.
You're like, wait, let me list all the ways.
Yeah, so here's me like, you know, doing like old form texting, you know, where you leave out vowels. No, I'm just kidding. But it was one of those things where I had to contact one of the voc rehab people that I had been working with. And I was like, what do I do? Because I don't know if this is legally binding. I don't know if they're going to be following this or if it's going to initiate a conversation. I wasn't quite sure. So I worked with them to come up with something which was really helpful. And they actually came up with a meeting, and there were two people in the meeting that helped me put together this, that if it was something legal or if it just was initiating the conversation, it gave them the right start to have that conversation. And so long story short, I didn't actually need as many accommodations because I was able to work from home. But when I went into work, there were more environmental challenges that were more challenging to me. So in that sense, the work from home aspect that was incorporated into my job was almost my accommodation, but it was something that came along with the job. So in a sense, there's sometimes that kind of, the matching of the job to what you're able to do, I think, can sometimes be important. And that comes with job exploration and some of the things that I did in college to kind of uncover some of those things. So that was a big help. But ironically, just being in the office the days that I am for big meetings or whatever, I've actually been helping them with patient access as well. Because when I'm in the building, it's like, if there's something that's not going to work for me as a power chair user, it probably won't work for other people. And so I've been able to, you know, work with some people within my organization to not only, you know, make accommodations for myself, but also others and patients who come to our facilities.
Sure. And I think wow, I never thought we'd go from like, you know, teaching people to fish and that kind of statement to COVID was a blessing. But yeah. But in an odd way, I have to agree, because I feel like being a person with a disability myself who uses a chair, I have always said that work from home would be one of the greatest gifts that someone could be given for someone with a physical disability in this space. And now it's like it's becoming what everybody wants. And so I feel like our community is almost laughing like, haha, we told you this would make it easier. Right. And I think that You were so right, because I can remember my first job ever was actually working at a tourist place. It was like a retail store that thousands of people would come to on vacation every summer. And I had to work in a particular space that I could manipulate and be around and be a part of the team. But they had to find and carve out the right spaces to be for me to be the most effective employee, right? That I could be benefit to the employer, but also do a job that I felt was like, you know, I'm earning my keep here. And I can, but it takes skill and time to get that kind of conversation in place. So one of my questions would be, Jennifer, do you have any tips for someone looking for accommodations, whether it be at school or at work? Like, what kind of advice would you give someone about expressing what your accommodation needs might be?
I think the first thing that I would say is, you're not going to know how game-changing these accommodations are until you get them. And you might have some idea of like, this is something that I'm struggling with, or you might not. You might not realize that everyone else isn't struggling with this. But if you start to get an inkling, chances are at least that accommodations are going to be game-changing in a way that you can't fathom until you get them. And keeping that in mind, I think is the huge thing, was the huge thing for me when it came to not being like, oh, I can live without this. Because having a life right now that I've set up with those accommodations, on the like lowest points is still miles easier than it was pre-accommodation.
Before, but how did you go about getting that life of accommodations in place? What kind of things did you do?
I think I looked at this and I was like, okay, this is where the cracks are. And then I just followed them to the beginning. So the example I gave before is I realized that I was struggling to go through a phone menu. And I said, look, I have a brother. I can call my brother and I can say, hey, can you listen to this and tell me what it says?
Right.
And it takes a minute out of his day and it saves me a week of waiting to get medicine. To get a primary care provider in this case.
So I feel like part of what you're saying a little bit is that like it's understanding what you might need and then sometimes thinking outside the box. And Aaron kind of mentioned this too in a roundabout way in saying that, hey, I got to sit down with two people and have a conversation about this. So I was able to think outside the box. And then it could be as simple as I'm gonna call my brother or I'm going to stay home a lot to do my job.
Yeah. Or at work, the job that I work has a lot of walking around. And if someone says like, hey, I can't do that today for whatever reason, just not pushing back to them. And then if I'm like, hey, I can't do this one thing because this is the thing that I struggle with and I just need someone else to carry it. Even not in an official capacity, because it definitely helps to have that in an official capacity, but just being knowing when a little bit of help is going to mean a lot of help. Knowing when a reasonable accommodation from someone else is going to be life-changing for you, that is the key to getting the things and being able to accept that like this is not a big deal for other people.
And I guess the buzzword that you're bringing up is natural supports, right? Hey, I work with these people and we have the way that we do things and it's like a natural support for them to just support you, but it doesn't impact the job or the work you're doing negatively or otherwise. Aaron, I don't know if you have other advice about tips for obtaining accommodations when you're going to an employer or in college, like the steps that you might have followed that were easiest for you?
Yeah, there's something that I keep kind of going back to, and I think you could also relate it to, you know, in a medical setting as well, is that I always say to people that you are your best advocate And so relying on other people all the time won't be your best option, unfortunately. And so what I always say, if there's someone that doesn't fully understand your situation, if there's the opportunity to explain it to a different person, you might have a better outcome. And they might even have a better solution that will help you in the long run. And so that's a big thing to me is that, you know, before when I've worked in folk rehab, for example, there was someone that just did not get it, you know, and I'm pretty thorough and I explain things and I've been through, you know, the trials and tribulations of trying to figure out what works for me. And even when I came to them with kind of a, here's my situation and here's the solution that works, they just wouldn't understand it. And so even though it can be awkward, requesting to work with someone else can be life-changing. And, you know, that's the difference between, you know, being able to get a better grade on a test or even one time, you know, I went to school in the desert and we would have these, you know, torrential, you know, downpours of rain. So all the streets would flood and I physically could not get to class because, you know, I would destroy my power chair. And so my accommodation, I told them was like, when it's, you know, the streets are flooding, like I can't go to class. So, you know, I can't have points taken off because I physically can't go to class. And the person said, everyone has to go to class. And I was like, well, but I physically cannot go there. And when I switched, they totally got it. I didn't even have to explain it, you know? So like accommodations like that, I think a lot of it comes from, you know, not only being a really good self-advocate for yourself and having kind of that problem solution presentation for that person, but also just, you know, working closely with them and kind of following through as much as you can.
I think one of the things that you said, this is great. I mean, you guys are like coming up with these golden nuggets of like little sayings or little quotes that are amazing. But one of the things that is a reality about getting accommodations, I think, is that you may come across people and organizations that just don't get it. And in other episodes, if you're listening to this, we've talked about this idea that there will just be people and places that don't connect with you and recognize what your needs might be. Even if you're explaining it and explaining it and explaining it, they just won't. But if you can find the right people that do get it, you will thrive. And so it matters to know what your disability is, how that impacts you, and what you might need. But you also want to be thinking about when you go to college, when you're going to get a job, does this place work for you? Like you're almost also working an interview and talking to them too, right? Do you feel you're going to have the support that you need? Do they understand and value that you are there to do your best and to thrive, right? And so finding those people that can not only support you, but also empower you to do what you want to do is really important too. That's kind of what I heard you say is like, hey, I couldn't get to class in the rain. This professor was being unreasonable about it. I made a switch. Next person got it. I was fine, right? It's literally making that right connection. So if you're working with young adults to do this process, help them understand the power of accommodations and what they mean and how impactful they can be. But I think also help them to identify places where they can find the most support for themselves. And so, I want to close and say, is there any tidbits of advice that you might just have for? How can I put this in the right way? A young adult who might be considering kind of speaking up about at their IEP or at college about what they might need. And maybe they're a little bit afraid. Is there any advice that either of you have about kind of facing that and to kind of close it out? Somebody want to take a stab at that? I probably should have picked somebody, but I don't want to put you on the spot for this. Because I work at a college in disability support outside of being a podcast host, right? So like I talk to students almost every day who say, I had accommodations in high school. I don't want them now. I don't want them here. I don't want that with me. But they're or they're afraid to tell you what their shortcomings might be or what they should be, what their needs might be. I don't want to use the word shortcomings, but like somebody who's like, look, I just don't want to admit this and say it out loud. Would you have some advice for them other than accommodations are great? Is there other advice you would have or other thoughts you would have? And maybe that's too hard of a question to ask at the end of this time.
I do think you put on something here is that there is a, I don't know necessarily that it's like internalized ableism, but there is a tendency, I feel like, to be like, I had these in the past, but now I won't need them. As if they're this like temporary thing that like is going to go away. This food is going to go away. So now you don't need it anymore. And I think a lot of that comes from shame around having accommodations or being shamed.
Yes.
And I think the idea that like an accommodation is just leveling the playing field. It's not making it easier for you than others. It's making it easier for you in the way that it's easier for everyone else to do this specific thing. And so sometimes like it can feel, it isn't something to be ashamed about if you need accommodations, and there's nothing wrong with that. And I don't know how to get across that message other than just lived experience of like, my life is better when I have accommodations.
Right.
Full stop.
I guess we'll kind of close on this, and I don't mean to be the last thought here, but I'll say I've gotten into arguments sometimes. I'll play politely stern discussions, right, with professionals that work in the school system that say, oh, well, an IEP is confidential and only certain people need to know and everything else. But I have talked to so many students and say, I feel like everybody knows what my accommodations are. And I don't really like that. Even if you're a chair user like Aaron is, that it's like, it's literally out there. It still sometimes can feel like everybody in this school knows about what my deal is. And even though they don't go out and blurt it out to the world, you feel like everybody knows, right? Everybody knows. And I can honestly say that when you go to college or when you go on the job, those conversations are, would you both agree that they're more private, like on the job and in college?
Absolutely. There's a huge difference.
Yeah. And so I always tell students or people that I'm talking to that like, nobody's really going to know about this outside the office. And the only reason they're going to know anything is because you're going to request the accommodations with a memo that indicates that you qualify for them. Right. So, but there's no information about why or what's the reason. And so it's literally up to them to kind of carry that out. And I guess that would be one of the last piece is that accommodations as you get older are up to you to be your own best advocate and have those conversations. A job can help you, but Aaron mentioned this way back in the beginning about like the interactive process of having that, what was it, a piece of paper, Aaron, and you had to ask like, does this mean this is happening now?
And, yeah, it gets right? confusing, right?
Yeah, but like you are typically, and so why you were probably confused is like, hey, wait, I'm the one that initiates this conversation. I'm the one that should be, they shouldn't be, right? So like, you know, so you as the young adult or you as an adult, as you age, it's up to them. It's up to you to have that conversation. And so if you're a parent or working at a parent center, you want to make sure that you're helping families understand, number one, what the power of accommodations are, how not having them could be a hindrance, and then helping people understand how to help their young adult best advocate for themselves as they get older, because you're not, it doesn't ever stop. Like Jennifer said, it doesn't go away.
Yeah.
It does not go away.
And one last thing to add on that, because it doesn't go away, it is important as this, the whole topic here is transition, right? One of the big parts of transition that is a huge stumbling block is going from someone who is not the primary person asking for these accommodations to being the primary person who has to ask. And I think one of the ways that we can smooth that transition over, both in as professionals and as parents who are listening to this, is to, from a very early age, start involving, having greater involvement and saying, like, this is how you're going to do this when I'm not here or when I'm taking more of a backseat.
Yeah. Yes, because if you don't, the accommodations that were in place at one time will not be.
Yeah.
And people will feel that impact as they move on throughout their life. I think that's a great way to kind of end this conversation. Thank you, Aaron, and thank you, Jennifer, for your thoughtful insights. Again, Jennifer, I wish you could remember exactly what you said so we could put that on a t-shirt or a mug and just sell it somewhere. You teach someone to fish and they can survive.
The statement I go with is you can't learn to fish on an empty stomach.
And in order for me to go fishing, I have to be fed first. I mean, that's what I heard. So I love that. Have a good one, everybody. And thank you for listening. And listen to our other episodes on other topics. And we hope that you'll stick around and we'll see you soon.